It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We're going to spend a few minutes now with Jad Abumrad from Radiolab, produced by WNYC. I've known Jad since he came to the station around 2000. I'm not sure of the exact year. And I've marveled at the development of his show, both on the radio and really kind of establishing the template for what a perfect podcast could be, right? Recently, he was on the TED Radio Hour talking about spreading his wings from that original template of beautifully produced science explainers to all kinds of things, from the Supreme Court to Dolly Parton to Guantanamo Bay to doing conflict resolution with lessons from journalism, as he put it. And I thought, Brian Lehrer Show listeners would really appreciate these deep thoughts on our medium, too. So, hey, Jad, welcome back to the live radio side of town.
Hey, it's great to be back with you, Brian, and to continue the journey now almost 20 years later.
Indeed. So here's an example of what people might consider classic Radiolab. This is from 2012, not the earliest phase of the show, but in that style that you and your partner Robert Krulwich developed. This excerpt mixes the idea of visuals and music in such a Radiolab way. We don't think of visuals and music in the same breath very often. And it begins with Robert speculating on what a butterfly looking at a rainbow would sound like.
So if a butterfly were looking at a rainbow...
I never thought we'd get here. They do, I'm sure. I mean, butterflies are out there when the rainbows are out. But with sea colors, we have no names for between the blues and the greens and the greens and the yellows.
Ooh. So it would go from ultraviolet, it would see that.
Yep.
Then it would see violet.
And then blue.
And then blue, blue, green?
Yep.
And green, green, bluey, bluey, or whatever?
Right.
And then orange and red and all that?
Yep. They have very complicated eyes.
Huh.
Okay, so just to recap.
All right.
Here's the dog. Here's us, humans. Now the sparrow. A little bit more bass, a little bit more high-end, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And finally, the butterfly. Which is, you know, not so far above the sparrow, but it's got more mids in there.
So I'm now thinking butterflies get the crown.
Yeah, but then if you go onto coral reefs, you come across these animals called mantis shrimps.
And we're not going to go on to mantis shrimps right now, but you get the idea. Classic Radiolab from 2012. So how did you and Robert meet and start to develop that kind of sound?
You know, I mean, we met, this is back in the Stone Age of another world of 2001, I guess. I was doing Radiolab just sort of by myself, literally in the basement of the home I'm now in.
Oh, wait, can I jump in just on that?
Yeah.
Do I remember correctly that before you started making Radiolab as we know it, you used to come in on Sunday nights and just kind of be a DJ for excerpts of various bits of audio that you would know about somehow from different places?
Yeah.
Or did I make that up?
No, you definitely didn't make that up. I probably passed you in the hall many times. That was the original incarnation of Radiolab. It was a 3-hour block, 8 p.m. on AM 820 to 11, where I would play documentaries from around the world, and I would sort of make connections and sort of narrate the gaps. In those days, it was all CDs. So I would come in, usually I would have finished it like minutes before, run in, stick the CD in, hit play, and then I would narrate some of the gaps live. I would do the weather live. And that was the original Radiolab. And then, you know, I met Robert and we started to evolve this whole way of talking about, it was mostly science in those days, but really science for poets, as I like to think of it. he was one of the best science explainer people ever at that point. And I was a guy who was very interested in finding new ways to use music and sound to illuminate ideas. And I don't know, the two of us just met kind of happenstancically. I don't even know if that's a word. And then we started having breakfast, and then he heard something I did and he decided he'd come and play. And Brian, you remember in those days, like there was only a few studios. And so you had to fight for studio time.
Yeah.
And so he and I would just meet at 6 a.m. when no one else was using the studio, and we would do these little experiments. And that evolved, very quickly into, kind of like the thing you just heard, where we're, hiring choirs and talking about mantis shrimp and what they may or may not see. And just, it really was an experiment, and it continues to be.
And you started out, am I right about this, as a composer of contemporary music, and then you got into audio storytelling. And so is it always your goal to fuse two of your interests, combine music and science in that kind of way?
Yeah, that, as I look back on it, that's definitely what it was. When I came out of school, I thought I was going to be a composer, and it turned out I was really bad at it. And so I got into radio really out of a sense of like, damn, that didn't work. No one would hire me. I was writing music for films, but it never worked out. I wrote music for a feature, and then they took every single cue I wrote out of the movie in the final version. So I was having a lot of those experiences, and I just sort of tumbled into radio. Honestly, Brian, you won't remember this, but there was one of the very first things that got me into radio was I did a radio piece for NPR. They gave me a tiny bit of money to go to one of their conferences. This is probably 2000. Mm-hmm. And you were talking at that conference. And I knew you. I knew your voice. I thought you were amazing. And I was just to see you do you live. I just remember being so inspired by that. And so it was like those early moments where I thought, well, maybe radio is a place where I can do stuff. Huh. And then, fast forward a few years, I think it became clear to me like, oh, I can do composition and that kind of stuff while telling stories. That's actually a place where I can do it and it works rather than the old way.
Well, if I served as some tiny percentage of your inspiration for creating Radiolab, then I have served my purpose on this earth. And I will say, listeners, that Jad is the only colleague that I have that I know of talking about this fusing of his music composition and his radio production on issues in science and everything, lives. He's the only colleague that I know of who has a little piano keyboard in his office, even as he's doing radio production on topics. So now I want to play something really different from what we heard before, really different from that Colors episode. This is from when you were on the TED Radio Hour, actually, just last year, talking about your award-winning podcast series, Dolly Parton's America, which was about America at least as much as it was about Dolly Parton, I'd put it that way. And you're discussing here with clips of her how the country music star Porter Wagoner kind of discovered Dolly Parton, but then she got much bigger than him and she leaves his show and he sues her for $3 million. And you, Jad, are trying to analyze that relationship, but as you tell us, Dolly's not having it.
This is a guy, you see it in the videos too. He's got his arm around you. There's a power thing happening for sure.
Well, it's more complicated than that.
And it was really interesting to me that she never, ever bought the assumption.
It's just, just think about it. He had had this show for years. He didn't need me to have his hit show. He wasn't expecting me to be all that I was either. He didn't know how many dreams I had.
And she was like, you can't summarize this relationship. There was power. There were all these other things happening. But there was also a lot of love. There was a lot of affection. There was a lot of musical chemistry. So don't just pretend it was one thing.
Porter and I had a love-hate relationship. You could never untangle all of that.
So like she constantly would push back against those moments for me. Mm. Like I think about that conversation all the time because she would do this thing where she would, in the same moment, advocate for herself and she'd also show great empathy for the other.
That excerpt now over. So, Jed, can you talk about that empathy within advocacy a little bit? I was really struck by that because that seemed not just to be good food for thought for your listeners as a soundbite, but to have real meaning for you and your work at Radiolab, yes?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting to hear that clip again. I mean, first, I just want to say I produced Dolly Parton's America with producer Shimon Liai, so she and I made it together. And that moment with Dolly and Porter, it was really profound for me. I kept kind of rolling it around in my head. You know, Dolly is, I undertook that series really to answer a simple question, like, how is this one person able to appeal to so many different slices of America that we are told should hate each other? You know, you go to a Dolly concert and you see every kind of person standing shoulder to shoulder singing the same song. And it's like an alternate space. And I just wanted to know, how does she do that? Like, how in the life that she's lived, the music that she's made. And one of the things that just kept coming up is that she is able to combine a fierce self possession or like agency, as the kids say, with a great amount of unrelenting empathy for the person she's speaking with. And those two things are often in opposition. You know, I mean, there is a sense that in order to sort of push yourself, I mean, I'm talking sort of in the political discourse in America right now, you know, in order to sort of like put yourself forward, you've got to first almost caricature the person against which you're defining yourself. And, you know, the people on the other side, no matter how much we disagree with them, they are never as simple as the scripts we have for them in our head. And I loved Dolly's insistence that she would never caricature people. Now, you know, there's a lot of places where you can fault Dolly for political stance she has or hasn't taken, but that chemistry, that alchemy of those mm-hmm. two seemingly opposite psychological traits, I feel like it's we as journalists, and Brian, you're an amazing, you also have that weird pixie dust, you know, that ability to understand, but also really hold firm in the same moment. And that paradox, I think, is where the best journalism needs to happen.
Well, we're out of time, but it's been amazing for me to watch your development from the early, amazingly beautiful and explanatory science documentaries into this interest that I see as your curiosity about the relationship between people's individuals' lives and America today, whether it's Dolly Parton's America or Latif Nasser, your Radiolab colleague's life when he discovered that he had the same name as somebody who was held maybe unjustly at Guantanamo Bay, through your most recent miniseries, The Vanishing of Harry Pace, which we don't even have time in this conversation to get into. But listeners, Jad Abumrad is not vanishing. He's keeping on his many brilliant paths here at WNYC Radio and on the podcast versions of his show. Jad, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me, Brian.